always improved because of this, because it's more like I always thought about that thing where they like, you know, cutting a tree down with the dull axe, or is it for 6 hours, or are you the guy for 6 hours sharpening the axe and cutting it for one?
Welcome to another edition of the Columbia University Sports Podcast, The Cusp Show. We talk about the business of sports, media, gaming, technology, disruption, all kinds of things. I'm Joe Favorito. My usual co-host, Tom Richardson, is off on a little bit of a vacation during spring break 2024. And I'm being joined again by our producer, sometimes host, and student, Mike Schroeder. Mike, welcome back.
Thanks again, Professor. Good to be back. And I'm excited to interview our guests. So let's make it be fun.
So for other people who've listened to this over the years, I've always talked about how one of my former bosses used to say, I live on kind of the lunatic fringe of sports, media, and entertainment. And when we were at the Sloan MIT conference, I sat in on a couple panels about chess because I've always been interested in chess since I was a young guy. I've always been interested in the strategy. I've been friends with chess grandmaster Robert Hess for quite a while. We've had him on our podcast. So it's always interesting to kind of learn. Plus, there have been stories recently about the NWSL players, NBA players taking on chess as a competitive form of strategy. So lo and behold, I was sitting in the speaker's room and sat down next to a gentleman who was on the panel. And we started to talk for a while. And he goes, you see that guy down the hall, down the other end of the table? Well, he's the world champion in chess boxing. And I'm like, okay, here we go. This is what I came to Sloan to find out about. So in our conversation sitting at the table, and then subsequently when I watched him kind of duking and styling it out later, I learned a little bit more about James Canty, Grandmaster. And he was nice enough to join us here today. So Motown native, grandmaster, chess boxer, jack of all trades, strategist, YouTuber, influencer, social media guru, James Canty, welcome to the Cusp Show.
Hey, Joe. Hey, good to have me, man. Good to be here. What's up, Mike? Good to have you too, man. So thanks to being, for putting me on the show, Joe. So I appreciate it. Nice talking to you. And it was a good talk, man. So learned about the show and everything too. So glad to be here, man. Glad to be here. I didn't know you play. You was such a chess advocate for chess there, Joe. Mike, did you play too or what?
I was very, very, I mean, I grew up in the era of Bobby Fischer and Boris Spassky and Gary Kasparov.
Yeah, Gary.
And remember vividly watching on PBS where they would move these pieces back and forth across the board. And then, you know, even, you know, it would pop up in other places, you know, and you had mentioned, which we could talk a little bit about how the Queen's Gambit kind of really kind of grew your business. And but even what was the other movie? Looking for Bobby
Fischer. Yeah.
Yeah. Another great movie with my friend Joe Mantegna. And you know, it's been obviously been a thing. And I had mentioned to you when we worked in MMA, there was a story that came out in Time Magazine that called MMA chess with blood. So immediately when I saw chess boxing, I thought of the opposite, which is blood with chess. So
that's funny.
But James, walk us through your career. Like, I mean, you have obviously an accomplished person in various areas, African-American, roots in Detroit. You know, walk us through kind of like how you got to be a grandmaster and what that entails these days.
Yeah. So from now, in fact, actually, I go by GM Canty, Grandmaster Canty all the time. I am close. I'm very close in strength. My ranking actually on paper is FIDE Master. But I made this name back in maybe before I even started streaming, before I even became popular. I just made it as like, maybe one day. I didn't even know how to even do GM or like anything about it. I actually have a cool story to share about basically kind of even found out about how to actually get to the title. But I knew, you know, they always say put things in front of you or like speak things to be not as though they were, or like put your goals in front of you and things happen, like vision boards, stuff like that. So I always put Grandmaster there, like GM Canty, as a goal. And now I'm like, you know, literally two titles away from it. So I'm already basically strength wise, I'm kind of like one title away from it. I already beat the guys that, in fact, what the level I'm at is like basically not even 1% reached the level I'm at right now, which is FIDE Master on paper. And then I consistently beat the second title, which is International Master. I was placed in a group basically with International Masters. It was called the IM not a GM, speech as championship. So it's kind of funny to play on words. I'm not a GM, but it's I am international master, not a GM, speech as championship, where we lock in with like 3 hours of chess versus basically all IMs and FMs. You couldn't be GM on paper, so you just could not be. But the strongest IMs, and they brought me because they know that I'm stronger than what I am on paper as his FM. But I was had to face, you know, international masters. I had 4 matches, and of course, there's all this talk in the chat, and like people, I could just I'm watching the film, and that stuff fuels me. I love seeing it, but in the back, like, oh, he's an FM. How could he possibly beat this IM on paper? Oh, he's this. Oh, you know, just the trash talk. And then you never see them anymore when I won the first match, you know, crushed the guy. He's a good friend of mine too as well, but definitely I upset. Then the second round, I faced a girl, Paulina Shuvalova, one grandmaster norm, 2,500 feet A, which is the minimum requirement to be a grandmaster. And they like, oh, there's no way Canty can win. Didn't see those guys anymore after I won that match, right? Then I win the third match, which is a Lawrence Trent, was another strong international master, one level below the grandmaster title, was able to take him down as well. So this FM, quotation marks on paper, just took down 3 international masters. And I would always say, guys, what else do I got to do? Like, I'm doing it right now. I'm just now I need to go and do this on paper. And what that requires is actually me going to big level tournaments and getting usually 9 rounds. I have to play 9 rounds. I have to play FIDE Master, IM, and GM. I have to play all of these guys in the circuit, scoring around 6, 6.5 to get 3 norms. Once I get this and do this 3 times and a 2,400 rating, I'll be international master. Then I have to do the same thing for GM, which is the route I never knew. I didn't even know it's called FIDE, is the Federation of International Chess. And I didn't even know about this, like, circuit of how to become a grandmaster until I was 21 years old. I was an adult, basically, already figuring out life and figuring out your dad. And if you don't have sponsorships, you know, dad doesn't pay for these hotels and these tournaments anymore. So this is expensive. So learning out life, figuring out life and et cetera and stuff like that was my first like step into, oh, I got to pay for this. This is hard. This is tough. So I found out, you know, kind of late in life about the FIDE route, where the only way to become a grandmaster, one of the best, is go the international route, where I had already 130 USCF, which is United States Chess Federation. I had 100-something events already as an adult, as 21. Nowadays, GMs are 12, 13, 14, you know, teenagers and they're grandmasters, but they went the FIDE route. So not a lot of times for me giving back at 31 now, I like to tell people, look, oh, what was some tips? You play FIDE. You got to play FIDE. I used to call it FIDE when I was 21 years old. I'm like, what the heck is a FIDE rating? No one cares about this, not knowing this is the only way to get to Grandmaster. So I had no idea. But so it was kind of flipped on my head once I learned about this. I'm like, well, now everything I was told was kind of a lie. So I need to have, you know, how do I get GM? Got to play tournaments, got to get ranked, and et cetera. So for me, I grew up in Detroit, Michigan. My dad taught me how to play when I was 8 years old, and it kept me off the streets of Detroit. Lots of problems, lots of things that you can do in Detroit. It's much better now, but of course, me growing up, it was definitely like, scary stuff. People in school and just like a bad area, stuff like that. People being guns to school sometimes. I remember growing up in that environment. Then my dad moved me to the West Side, and we started playing chess, and it just kind of kept me, you know, level, something to do. And it was also very fun. I loved doing it. And the spark came where, like, I was in chess club. Chess club was very awesome. Loved chess club. And then the problem was my coach, may rest in peace, Harold Steen, he was like, hey, there's this thing called the Nationals. And every year you go to Nationals if you do very well. And they pay for, like, you know, imagine the top 5 basketball players, football, any sport, right? They pay for all of that food, everything paid for. You go play and compete. I wasn't good enough to go. So because I wasn't good enough to go, dad didn't like that too much. Also, there was one guy named Dalton Barksdale, my buddy to still today. He's about 1900 strength, but he would talk trash and crush me. And my dad hated this. This is like 5th grade. And he would just destroy me and talk trash. And my dad hated this a lot. He still tells Dalton today. He's like, yeah, Dalton, it was your fault, man. That now Jimmy's a monster, meaning me. So it's like Dalton would talk trash and stuff. My dad didn't like this. I didn't make it to the team. Dalton, you know, trash talking me and crushing me every game. So what happened was, and this was my first taste of work. You know, I always say this to my stream all the time. And my following, they understand that discipline and work is two things that we go hand in hand here. Motivation at school, we may be motivated, but that runs out. At some point, you have to really rely on the discipline and the work. That's the difference. And that's the key to success. So what we did, my dad gave me, we would get up every morning right out of school, once school let out, you know, middle school, we got the summertime. He will wake me up at 7 in the morning. And I'm like, Dad, bro, it's 7 a.m. We don't have school. Why am I up at 7 a.m.? So we was playing chess from 7 a.m. to 12 noon every single day. I would also go to the chess club too on weekends from like 11 noon and stay there till midnight, you know, until it closed. So I was there playing chess with the old heads on the weekends. But I was playing chess. My dad, I go back to school that summer, literally two, not summer, but you know, 2 months of doing this. Go back to school, beating everyone. I'm beating everyone except the coach. So that was my first like work. Oh, you put in the work and good things happen. So I got that work done. That was very good to say the least. With that part. Then afterwards, well, fast forward, I go to high school. I'm basically doing well. I'm like the best in the city. You know, I'm taking winning national championships. Things are good. I go into high school already over 2,000, which is basically, you know, a top 5-10% player in the world, expert. It was a big deal, basically prodigy kid type thing. I graduate already a master, still never even knowing about FIDE or even knowing GM was a thing. Once I get out of school, I'm like, hey, you know, chess is expensive. Chess, you know, it costs money to do these things. It's kind of like tennis or any sport where you have to actually even set. If you don't have sponsors, you got to come out of pocket, basically. So it wasn't easy for me understanding this. I'm like, all right, cool. I got to work. So I went to the military for a few years, Air Force. Then I went down to Atlanta and lived down there for a few years, and then had a big spark. This was around 2014, where I wasn't playing chess really as much. A guy of mine, Frank Johnson, shout out to him. He's like, "Hey man, you ain't playing chess." I'm like, "Yeah, bro. It's like I gotta work. Like it's money. It costs money. It's ridiculous." And he's like, "Hey man, did you see this tournament?" I'm like, "What tournament?" He shows me the flyer, and my eyes light up. It's called the Millionaire Chess Open, and I'm like, "What the heck, Millionaire Chess?" So I look, and first place, 100,000. I was like, "Whoa!" But I already knew, like, okay, if I'm thinking like this, I know the top level grandmasters in the world are going to be out there, so competition is going to be very stiff. What realistically can I get, knowing where my ranking is? So I saw this under 2,300, which is still a strong master, but under 2,300 prize, and I was like, oh, I could probably win that. And first for that was 40K. I was like, 40K for first? You got to be kidding me, right? So, and then second was 20,000, and then third, and I was like, if I get fifth place, I was getting 10,000. I mean, 5,000. So I was like, "Ooh, this is the skill. This is what's going to work." So what happened was 2014. I was working for Georgia State University, and it was a great job. I'm not even gonna lie; it was probably the greatest job I've ever had because I was just taking girls to class and golf carts. It was awesome. But I had a security; it was like security thing, and I had a golf cart sitting in class. That was pretty awesome. So, but I remember in February of 2014, they was like, "Hey, you know, this tournament's coming up. It's going to cost $1,000 to enter." So I had to get that money up. I also have to pay for the room and hotel and flight. So stuff's not cheap. It cost me like maybe 3 to 5K before I even got down there. So, and I have to play. But I knew if I wanted to win this money, I was playing 2K14 every day, 5 hours, basically basketball. And I was like, if I don't like stop or figure out some work here, I'm not going to win this money. So it hurt, but this was my second type of a work deal. I had my first with my dad when he was like, yo, showing you how work works, how you're supposed to do it, and what happens when you put in work. So what I did here was I sold my Xbox and my TV, and it hurt. It definitely hurt. But I was able to get a lot more of those after the payday I got in that October. So I studied, I used that same 5 hours to study, and I went down there in October and won $20,000. So I still remember the most expensive move I played, or most expensive game I ever played, was a $20,000 game. All I had to play was knight h4, and I sometimes I tell friends like, hey, yeah, I have. It was like, you have any chess dreams? I'm like, yeah. Sometimes I still wake up and have cold sweats and say, you know, knight h4 in my sleep, you know, because it was a $20,000 game basically that I lost, and but I still ended up having $20,000 there. So that was, I was like, wow, you know, I win that money, I feel great. Chess is awesome. But then I go back and I'm like, you know, I was only one tournament. Like, you know, this is not a forever thing. How do I make money through chess? Fast forward 2018, really was just kind of doing lessons, still working jobs. And then 2018 came around where I saw my friend, chess coach Net, Frank Johnson, who told me about the Millionaire Chess event. He was streaming, which is Twitch. And I was like, what the heck is this stream thing? So I get on the stream with him. I watch him. It's fun. You know, they got music playing, they're playing chess. I thought this was amazing. How can I get a part of this? So I talked to him off stream for like 4 hours. He's like, yo, get into this. This is the new wave type thing. You know, you can really kind of blow up. I'm like, all right, cool. So I gave it a shot. And I remember my last job before that was door-to-door sales before that. And the reason why I was doing it, craziest job I ever took, even to this day, thinking about it, I'm like, why did I do that? But I know why, because the guy was a millionaire, you know, drove a nice BMW, great, very big house. I was like, man, you got this from door-to-door sales? I got to see it. So, and it was also all commission-based too. I was like, this is nuts. Like, I can't believe I'm doing this. But it was more about the skills that I learned about discipline and like mindset and things that I learned from him. That he was like, yo, if you don't make it here, you know, and you don't like get promoted as a officer or whatever, and like get your own office with a sales team, you're going to be very successful from the skills that you learn here and whatever else you choose to do. And the next thing I did was streaming, which you need to be social. You need to talk to chat. You need to understand who you're talking to. You have a lot, juggle a lot of things at the same time. So I started streaming and it literally took off. The first 6 months, I became a Twitch partner, which is the 1% of the site. You know, only 1% of millions of streamers reach Twitch partner, which is a check mark. Basically, you got these accolades, partners, ads, all this money, stuff like that. So it's good. But I became 1% basically the first 6 months of streaming. And then that was 2018. And then I blew up in COVID times with Queen's Gambit, gave us a 600% increase in all chess here from there. So now I'm able to study and train chess as I'm going for my Grandmaster title. And on top of that, also make money through chess as well. And push to the world. I'm now approaching 100K Instagram followers. My YouTube is at 25,000 subscribers and climbing. I'm up 500,000 views this month. So it's exploding like I've never thought, you know, and I never thought I'd be playing chess as my hobby or as my my career. It's great.
Mike,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I think a question with that is just talk a little bit about just, you know, how you were able to market to the Gen Zers, the Gen Alpha millennials through Twitch and through YouTube and through Instagram, and how that's helped build your brand successfully, both from a streaming content creation standpoint and also as a Grandmaster chess player.
I would say two things right now. Number one is that making sure chess is fun. Like anything that's not fun is just, they're not with. You're like, I mean, that's just anyway, not even just Gen Z, but you know, I make, for me, I make chess like almost like when I'm doing commentary or like anytime I'm talking about chess, it's more like fighting. You're like, yo, I felt like I was watching UFC or watching ESPN is what they always say when they hear my commentary, or they're more excited because that's just how I genuinely feel about the game. I'm an exciting social person and like, chess is fun like that. It really can be. And I learned this at a young age. It doesn't have to be like sitting in a college economics class, right? So it's nowhere near that. You could just, I mean, there are times where it's going to be very boring if I'm talking about some Knight or Sicilian on move 40 in the end game. Yes, of course, that's going to be boring. I understand. But you can also make it very hype and for the masses. The second thing is I've learned, you know, I've kind of not mastered it, but I do know that right now I'm on top when it comes to short form content. We're like 30 seconds to 6 to a minute. And my games online, every night, I play about 100 games every single night online with my chat as well. And we have arenas where we all play, but we play in 30 second arenas. What does that mean? In fact, that means both sides have 30 seconds on the clock. That's it. So one game lasts 1 minute. It's not going to go more than 1 minute. So imagine playing an entire chess game in 1 minute. One whole game. So we play this every night and it's 100 games of this every single night, right? So that, and then we'll take clips of some of the best games and some of the most fun games. I'm like, you know, send me the clip. I'll be saying that on, and then they'll just send me the clip. And like, you know, we got this whole thing on Instagram called send me the, they spell it out S-E-N-M-I-D-A. It's because it sounds like that's what I'm saying. So now they all say it. It's like hundreds of people just commenting send me the now, which is funny, but it's short form content where, you know, this attention spans have changed in this day and time. So it's harder to keep people locked in on long-term form content, but something quick, oh, that was crazy reaction gets a lot of views, gets a lot of eyes on it. So we, that's how I keep people involved these days, especially the Gen Zers. We have to make sure we keep them occupied by the short form stuff, fast and excited.
James, who are your followers? Can you give us kind of a breakdown? Are they from around the world? Are they American? Are they young kids? Are they fathers and mothers? Give us a kind of an overview of some of your bigger followers.
Great question. My follower, my range is predominantly men. I think I've looked at like about 95% men, 5% women. The ranges are actually from early adults, so like 16, 17, all the way up to 45, 50-ish is what I saw on the back end. So adults, usually the sweet spot the most is between 25 and 40. 25 and 40 is like the sweet spot. That's like my target audience, you know, the guy, my perfect customer type of dude is that 25 to 40. adult male, and then yeah, that's really it. But I also have a lot of kids too as well these days. Like I have a chess. I went to a national festival for kids called the Chess Kid National Festival. I didn't know I had that many kid fans. Like I have a chess bot, you know, so I have a bot where you can play. I have two of them, one on chesskid.com, so the kids can play my bot. And like I actually, it's talking. I'm like, hey, that's not a move, kid. What are you doing? Like it talks like me and everything. Of course, I had to do the voiceovers for that. But so kids will like, you know, walk up to me and I'm signing boards, I'm signing autographs, I'm taking pictures. Like it's like, you know, I'm a celebrity, like in a chess world. It's insane. But I love it and I take it all in and I try to get back as much as I can. So, but most of my fans are adults.
So,
So
question, two-part question. One is, when you're playing online, are you physically playing against someone in the room or you're playing someone elsewhere? That's number one. Number two is, give us a feel for people who've never been to a major chess event. Is it thousands of people watching? And this is just in person. Obviously, there are thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands watching online, but what is the atmosphere in the room? You know, what's it like? When you play online, is it in person or against other people online? And then when you go to a major championship, what is that like? Kind of set the room for us.
okay, definitely. Yeah. Well, playing online is yes, you are playing. I'm like right now, for instance, I'm sitting in my setup at home and I would be playing. Actually, last night I played a guy. Actually, let me see. I can just check right now to see who, the countries I literally just played last night. But there are, check the archive here. We are, yeah, I would just be sitting, you know, playing and the other guy is playing from wherever. For instance, okay, so I played this guy from. They don't show me the flag. Oh, Mongolia. So I played a guy from Mongolia last night. I gained some rating off him. France. I played France. I played a guy from Israel. I played Brazil yesterday. Let me see. Oh, I played Serbia yesterday. A lot of the Serbians are usually from Russia because but they changed their flag and federation due to the Russia thing, obviously. India. Played a lot of Indians. I played India. A lot of America. Canada's there. So yeah, you know, a lot of they. I play them from everywhere. It's pretty cool that you know you can be at home and play somebody that hey, it's 1 p.m. here, and then it's like 3 a.m. over there. Like it's really. I can play anyone from around the world, so that's kind of cool. And then secondly, with the tournaments too, as well, especially my high level events. It depends on where I am, but like bigger festivals, for instance, like I go to the Maya Chess Festival in Portugal every year, where that one has maybe 200, 300 people there. But there's also spectators too, as well, people of all levels. But the type of atmosphere is. It depends on what kind of tournament it is. Generally, though, it is more like it's competitive and it's also. It's kind of tense because everyone's there to play. Everyone's there to play. There's a lot of emotion too that goes on, especially at the higher boards, because you want to play. You want to play well. You don't want to give away prep. You don't want to be too talkative or like sometimes even for me, I watch diet. Like you know, you get good sleep and et cetera. These things are. It's really athlete mode for the higher level players like myself. I'm more in athlete mode. I'm just yeah. I'll take some pictures here. I'm not going out. I'm not staying out too late. I need to get back. I'm not having too many drinks. You know, I have a drink here or there. But it's really work time. It's here to work and get it done. So it is not stressful, but it's tense. It's like you know, being on the NBA floor type thing. We're like, okay, it's time to work. Game's in 15 minutes. Like yeah, we're warming up, but we got to get in the right mindset. To be ready here. We're here to do a job. You know, it's not, you know, if I'm there to mingle. Oh, the atmosphere is great. I'm watching all the games. I'm like hanging out. I'm checking things. But if I'm in game time and game mode, I do walk around. I'm checking every game more intensely. I'm preparing more. A lot of times as a player, you prepare a lot hour. Even after you prepared, you're still preparing. Even when you feel like you over prepare, you under prepare. Even when you over prepare, over prepare when you're under prepare. Like it's just, you're just. It's tense. It's very tense. It's definitely very tense. But I think the way that you stay relaxed is obviously right now I work with a mental conditioning coach. So of course, number one is breathing, working out, and obviously self-talk is good as well. So it's really not stressful, but again, tense. It's like you're in battle mode when you're there. At least when I'm there to get the job done, especially this year, 2024. My goal is to strengthen the strengths and also hit a new title.
So, before we get on to your talking a little bit about the athletic side of this and how we kind of started talking with the phenomenon of chess boxing, what is this? Give us an idea for what the circuit is like. So, if you're a professional chess player taking the online piece, which you've, no pun intended, mastered to this point, how many events would a normal chess champion play during a year? Is it a calendar year? Is it set up, in regions? How does that work, and what does it look like?
That's a great question. In fact, you can actually play as much as you like. You can play, there's some that play every month, there's some that play every week, but that's more stressful because you really aren't doing. In fact, I worked with a lot of Russian chess coaches. The one that I just worked with, the last one, was the best one I ever worked with. I mean, he was more of a psych coach than anything else, kind of getting out of your own head and like the Russian school of chess, which the Russians were the best at some point before Bobby Fischer, obviously, in American chess, India now, but Russia's was just OGs in chess. That's still how it is today, Soviet school of chess. That's just how it goes. So, working with him, I learned a lot. And he also would say things like, you can play literally every month, every week as you like. But he was like, you need time to train, and not an off season, but you need time to train and you need time to play. So what he was saying is like kind of old school Russian to chess. They would play for a few months at a time and then study for a few months at a time and then play for a few months at a time and study. So I have adopted that style now. And I found that every time I'm playing high level tournaments every few months, I do very well. As opposed to if I'm playing every month, I do worse, in fact. So I remember looking at my stats where like I did play every month, but it was going up and then going up because I don't have time to debrief and look at really from the inside because I'm already preparing for the next tournament. Sometimes over preparing, not giving myself enough time to rush and to rest there. So you can play nowadays. For instance, now I have a tournament at the end of the month, and then I'm going to rest and train to the next one, which is the end of April. And then after that, I have some in May, and then in summertime, I actually am going to spend time probably playing maybe 2 weeks on, and then 3 or 4 weeks off, play in July, August. And then chill a little bit in September. I know I have something in October. I have some fights coming up too as well. So I'm just gonna relax and chill a little bit and prepare for that. But I'm always preparing, because you never know when you're going to actually play. But you can play every month. You kind of set your own schedule, kind of like fighting, like in boxing, actually. It is like you just, oh, I can fight every month or I can fight, every few months type thing.
Got it. So, one more thing before we get to the chess boxing side. You talked about preparation and playing. You think about the NFL, there's 6 days of preparation, 1 day of play. How does that compare to professional chess? You talk, is it much, much more preparation, watching videos, understanding who your opponents are, and then playing? Or how much of it is kind of the impulsive speed chess where you constantly learn as you play?
In fact, I'm more of a 70-30% split. I always like to say 70% study, 30% play. I am
Wow.
always usually studying more than I am playing. And I've always improved because of this, because it's more like I always thought about that thing where they like, cutting a tree down with the dull axe, or is it for 6 hours? Or are you the guy for 6 hours sharpening the axe and cutting it for one? Right. So, that's I'm that guy where I'm going to sharpen it until it's the sharpest that it can be. And then I'll start working on it. So, I found that the more that I study, yeah, you can play, but you can also have bad habits while playing, so you're developing a lot of bad habits, or you're continuously doing bad habits where you could have broke them in the first 2 hours of study and then worked on that new habit you built in that 1 hour of play, as opposed to 2 hours of the bad study or 2 hours of the bad play and 1 hour of good study. So you do need a time where you should play a lot, but I'm a fan of study, work, 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 work. Like, what's the saying of, I don't know, I don't fear the guy that knows 1,000 kicks. I know the guy that knows the one kick he did 10,000 times, whatever he says there. So I am a fan of the study first. I teach this to students too as well. The more that I found that the more that I study, the more I am prepared for foreplay.
Got it. So go ahead, Mike, and then we can
Yeah, before.
transition.
Before we jump into chess boxing, I do have one other question I want to ask, which is just the idea of your growth in terms of your approach to chess. And I think that talking about that a little bit would be great for the viewers. Just the idea of just what exactly have you grown in terms of your strategy or in terms of the way you market yourself? Because chess is such a strategy-based game and you have to study so much. So talk a little bit about how you've grown from how you approach chess.
Great question. For me, growing in an approach to chess is more of like, I always say that I use the Jedi thing all the time, like Star Wars. So, I always say I'm a Jedi. People even refer to me as the Jedi all the time, as we use the Force and et cetera, like using your mind and mind over matter type thing. But we grew between a few things. I think the growth really helped when it came from like number one is we're constantly working. I see it. I show it every day that we're working, we're improving. we're hitting new highs, one with the growth. Number two is the mindset. We talk about work. We talk about discipline. We talk about, you know, people that talk about these things about work and discipline, successful people. We use maybe even basketball players, Kobe in particular, may rest in peace, talking about, you know, his mindset and what things that he would say and apply it to chess too as well. And then also discipline, showing people that, you know, hey, you are not going to be motivated sometimes. But well, how do you mitigate that? It's making discipline a habit. How do you do that? By just doing it. I always tell people about the Nike slogan, the growth through that. And what they say, just do it. Literally, you just do it. And then you develop a habit of just doing it. And no matter what it is, you'll be successful at it. Really is what that's about, the discipline there. And the growth of me having like nothing. I remember being from 10 followers and 200 views to now having like close to 60,000 followers on Twitch now. And then also Instagram, I was at 7,000 followers like 8 months ago, and now I'm about to touch 100K. But it's more about between me being, again, a Jedi, the growth, the discipline, and also my style. I'm a very aggressive tactical player. I say that my grandfather is Meikai Tao, and I always say, hey, do you see the resemblance, even though we look nothing alike? But I'm just like, hey, you know, we look like twins, don't we, right? Because I just embody the aggressiveness of this player who passed away a long time ago, but Grandfather Tao is what we call him because of his style of chess, the most aggressive player. So I think all of these things tied together really have a lot of choices and options for people to choose from where they can connect with me, which causes us to grow at an exponential rate.
Got it. So Mike, we were sitting or I was kind of walking around the halls of the convention center in Boston. And you keep hearing these young people whispering, chess boxing. I got to go watch chess boxing. Yes, chess boxing. It's got to be packed on Saturday morning. Everybody's going to go see chess boxing. And I was in the speaker's room, as I mentioned before, and James was sitting next to me. And he turned to me and goes, you see that guy at the end of the hall, at the end of the table over there? He's the world champion. I'm like, okay, I got to go see this guy talk later. All right. And it was pretty amazing to see and to listen about the discipline, some of which you just talked about, breathing and pacing yourself and I'm just having a good mentality. But in 3 minutes, James, tell us chess boxing. What is it? How does it work? And what is the path forward and why are you involved?
Yeah. So chess boxing is, it's a sport where, I mean, it sounds exactly what it is. It's chess and it's freaking boxing.
Pretty simple name.
They didn't pretty simple name, bro.
Some other name.
So. You are either winning by KO, hopefully you don't get knocked out, or you're winning by checkmate. So I couldn't believe it was a thing. I thought somebody was just like, you know, pulling my leg, but they were not. In fact, you can Google it. You can see videos all the time about people literally chess boxing. So what chess boxing generally is, though, again, you either win by checkmate or knockout. So with that being said, you don't have to be the best boxer. You don't have to be the best chess player either. So I found this very intriguing because I don't want to be fighting, you know, Tyson or Mayweather in a chess. Like, no, I don't want to do that. I've been boxing a year. I got nice hands, but I am not no like 10-year veteran boxer out here. So you have to have a healthy balance of skills there and where like, you know, type of skill set has to be the same in both areas, even in the chess part. So it makes it very, very laser focused on like who I'm going to be able to fight, qualify, which is cool for me, but you know, chess boxing, I think, is an awesome sport for people that like combat sports. I do like combat sports because, you know, they say you always have a plan until you get punched in the face, right? So you have to think about when the last time you got punched in the face or someone actually actively trying to punch you in the face. That is a different story. Then you have to, like, you know, after 3 minutes, there's 3 minutes on, 3 minutes off. Sometimes there's 7 rounds. Sometimes there's 3 rounds. Sometimes there's 5. It just depends. But there's 3 minutes of boxing and there's 3 minutes of chess. So you go back and forth until there's a clear winner, either on a board or by knockout in there. And of course, you know, you do have to have, you know, same skill set or same amount of like kind of boxing experience type thing. You have to match up well. So it's not like just a, you know, one guy's crushing me in chess or one guy's killing you in boxing type thing. That's just not fair. So I want to make it as fair as possible there. I got a few fights this year and we actually supposed to go over to Russia with the world champ, not Russia, but Serbia, basically, to actually fight. I think that'll be my second fight this year. My first one somewhere around May-ish, I think, April or May. So we'll see. But, you know, I'm getting ready for that, man. So I fight more like Tyson. I have a Tyson build. So I've been learning more of the peekaboo style. I was normal for a while, my first year of boxing. Now I was like, okay, I'm now leaning more into like my ancestry, which is kind of my build is Tyson. So I have to, I'm learning how to fight like Tyson, more peekaboo, moving my head a lot, switching my feet, power punches, and et cetera. I just left boxing literally this morning. So Yeah, it's exciting. I've never been in this type of shape in my life. I'm watching my diet like never before. I have abs I haven't seen since high school. I'm 31. So, I'm in the best shape now than I've ever been in. But boxing's helped me do that. And also, I have a great chance to be world champion. So, based off of the stats, based off of the people who I'm gonna be fighting, maybe, and like I have a very good shot. Even the world champion himself was like, yo, man, you could go all the way based off what he's seen and experienced and how I'm looking, right? And my chess game, I have a very good shot to be a world champion chess boxer. So I can't, world champion chess, those days aren't for me, but grandmaster is, and maybe be on the world champion team to help, with the world champion. But grandmaster is definitely on the cards for me, but not world champion, but world champion chess boxer. Yeah, that one's sooner than you think.
So we're here in March 2024. How many people compete worldwide in chess boxing? And talk a little bit about this event that was discussed, which is a potential exhibition in Paris this summer during the Olympic Games with the IOC.
Actually, I'm actually Googling right now. That's a good question. How many people are in chess boxing? Let me
And it
just.
is co-ed, correct? I mean, there are both men and women who compete, although not
Correct.
against each other.
Correct. And not exactly right. There's 380. So there's 380 competitors right now, active members. Of course, there's other ones too as well, but 380 members in the chess boxing sport. That's pretty nice. So the Olympics have, we're having our first chess boxing expedition there. I forgot who's fighting, but I'm actually trying to make it out there to myself. If not, then you'll see it. But it's going to be fun to have it there at the Olympics, which is insane to have that there, like chess boxing. That's insane. I was very happy to see that, but I would gladly be a part of it, too, as well. Want to be a part of it myself, but I don't have anything to do besides just kind of, watching it. I know Matt Thomas, who's the world champion boxer, is going to be, facilitating that part, but I'm excited to see, how it's going to be and what doors it opens for me and other chess boxers in the future.
And also kind of set the visuals. It's a ring, correct? And then you will bring a table and a chess set and an official in. So it's not like there are actually referees that cover both boxing and chess as well.
Yeah, in fact, you know what there is? There's actually some commentary on chess. So like the guys, for instance, like people that have, no idea how to play. There's a guy that's like, hey, he moved this piece because of, he wanted to go for a checkmate attack on the king side. So there, but what happens is as soon as the bell rings, you go see a corner, they bring out the chessboard, they give you like a minute of rest, and then you go in there and you play, and you sit down, and you play that game. And then boom, 3 minutes hits. Okay. And nothing happened. No checkmate. They take the board away. You get back there, gloves on, strap up, and go swing at each other for another 3 minutes. And then they go back and forth until knockout or checkmate.
Got it, Mike.
Yeah. So I think, I guess, talk about the challenges from, going to be a chess, grandmaster to saying, okay, now I want to go into the boxing realm and be successful here in chess boxing. Like, talk about the challenges of that and how you were able to, find success in that.
Challenges about the first part you said, Mike.
No, the challenges from the transition from being,
Oh,
incredible at chess to now being in, in the boxing.
yeah, the transitions there. I think it was honestly quite easy. I am just a learner of like, I'm a student. So I'm a student first type thing where like I'm a student of the game and I always can learn even from games that I win. I learn from my losses, I learn from my wins. So I picked up boxing quite quickly. Actually, when I started boxing for the first time, like last year, I've been boxing like over a year now, or right around a year, actually. But boxing, I remember how I was like, man, I'm winded. I can't believe this type of like, how do they do this? And I have more respect for boxers from like the first week when I started boxing. Then now it's more of I treat it the same way. Like I learn, I could study a lot in chess, so I study boxing. I do the, I work out more at home. I work out, I do my shadow boxing. Like I learn, I'm absorbing a lot of information quite quickly. And because I think chess players just have, especially high level chess players, have a natural ability to, if you want to learn it, you'll learn it very quickly. That's why a lot of times in stock markets or like trading, they actually hire a lot of chess players. I've seen a lot of chess players recently actually have been going the stock route or like trading for big companies. I know friends of mine that actually are doing that, they're trading for big companies. Also, poker players, a lot of them play a lot of poker or gambling, casino, stuff like that. And they do well because, the chess helps them do that. So I think for me, it was a quick and easy thing. As I'm still learning, I apply a lot of the chess things, how I learned and how I play chess to boxing. And it's been great because I love learning. So when I love learning chess, like I learned something today. I was like, oh man, keep your eyes open when I'm making this roll off the turn with a left hook. That's nasty. So then when I do that and I tried it, I'm like, wow, that's just like I just learned something new. It's gonna be bad for my whoever I'm fighting because I just learned this, right? So It's been good. Easy transitions.
Last question from me, James. What's your day like? Like, what time do you get up? How much time do you devote to each? Because you mentioned you're playing sometimes late into the night.
Great question.
What's your day like? Run us
Great
through your day.
question. I usually will get up anywhere between sometime, like if I have my sons, I have a 6 and a 4 year old, and usually they live with mom, but if I have them for the week or a few days, usually between 6 and 7 in the morning to take them to school, then I'll come back and nap until like 9 or 10, because usually my days don't start till around 9 or 10 unless I have a very early day. Then I'll get up and go to the gym. So I'll try to be in bed by 12:31-ish, like be in bed, which means I'm only getting 5 or 6 some days, but some days I get 8 to 9. So it depends. So usually between 8 and 10, I'm up getting ready for the day. What does that mean? I'm either working out, then I come back and I have a few lessons to do in the morning. Then I'm doing chess work, where that's read your commentary, Chessable work, working with Chessable, doing some lessons, also creating some content, curating some content too as well. Really, everything's around content. My YouTube channel, cutting, editing videos, Twitch videos too as well, clips from the streams and et cetera, organizing that stuff, and then either doing some sponsorship or brand deals. It's just work, emailing, typing stuff all day, basically throughout the day. And then I stream every day around 8:30, 9 p.m. ish every day. So at 9 p.m., I go on, and then we stream to about 12 or 1. And then I get back to sleep and then repeat every day.
Wow.
Yeah.
7 days a week, by the way.
Seven days. Yes. I work 7 days. I've been doing seven since 2018. So it's just grinding, grinding. And then, obviously, I have my time to study in the day as well. So if I got 3 hour block before I got to do something, cool. I'll take that time to study and study some chess and keep going from there and keep grinding until we hit the goals.
Got it. Before Rob, we let you go, we ask most of our guests actually three questions. The first one is, how do you stay up to date? Like, where are your go-to places to learn more, both on chess and boxing? The second thing, and you touched a little bit about this, is advice that you give to people transitioning careers, and obviously you transitioned several times, or just starting out. And then the third one, which is our most fun one, is what's on your shelf? So if you turn around and you look around a room, what are the things on your shelf that you treasure the most?
Okay, that's a good one. That's a good one. So you got to help me with them questions again. What's the first one though?
The first one is, how do you stay up to date? Where are the sites
Up
you
to
go
date.
to?
Okay.
What do you listen to for
Perfect.
inspiration?
Oh, great. So staying up to date, that's great. I actually watch streams a lot. Me being a streamer, I'm like a top streamer. So in the chess world, I just watch a lot of streams. I even know people that are just starting out streams or like brand new. When I was brand new and I wanted people to watch my stream, I just go look. So I just see what's going on, what's being done. Lots of that. Twitter, believe it or not, people just love to speak their mind on Twitter. I'm not a Twitter guy, but I am on Instagram. I'm on TikTok, Twitch, and YouTube and stuff like that. Instagram, but Twitter. I'm also on Twitter. I'm also on chess.com. I read articles. I read blogs. I'm also on Reddit. I think Reddit is underrated. Reddit is, man, people are not on Reddit.
And by the way, about to go public.
Oh,
So,
wow. What about the public? Perfect. Yeah, I need that. I'm sorry to get some stock in that. But Reddit is nice. Reddit is very nice. Underrated. I mean, I ask Reddit all the time. Even my Google searches are like blah, 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 Reddit, so I can get all the stuff from Reddit now because it's real, real people. Like, this is great. So that's the first question there. What's the second one?
Advice you give to people who are coming along, just in general, for different career changers or getting
Okay.
started.
Yeah, definitely. I think advice for people career changes wise, I think it really is there's a few things. Number one is just doing it. You will never be fully ready. And that's for anything. Like you just have to jump in and just do it. Number one is that. Number two is work. Like, of course, is, as I tell my streams, like anything, they always say talent beats, you can be talented at something, but hard work beats talent when talent is not working. But if you are talented, it's even stronger. If you have talent and work, that's a deadly combination. So, definitely put the work forward no matter what. You may even beat people more talented than you because you just worked harder than they did. So definitely work. And the last thing there is discipline. Having a discipline is just doing it even when you don't want to do it. And even when you're not motivated to do it, try to develop that. And how do you do it? By Nike slogan, just doing it, literally just doing it. So definitely advice out to those guys out there.
Cool. And then the third one is, what's on your shelf? Like, what are the things?
So on my
So.
shelf here, in fact, I have right in front of me, I have a Chessable monkey. It's like their logo thing. So it's a weird little Chessable monkey thing. Let me see if I can actually turn my camera on. Hold on, let me move this thing. Oh, click this. Okay, I mean deactivate and then activate over here. Okay, should be good. All right,
Yep,
there we go.
it'll
Yeah,
work.
there we go. All right, so I have this Chessable monkey here. I have this thing. This is like a Chessable. It has like Chessable is the best place to study. So You got I have this all right in front of me. I have a pen. I have my coffee mug with my camera with my brand on it, COE, calculation number, everything, chess books. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 mice around me, basically for the computer, because I like to have different grips for ergonomics and stuff. Got my I got a lot of stuff on this table here. This and then my stream deck. I got a green pawn. It's like a it's
Of
a
course, you need the green pawn.
you need a green one. And
Not
it's like
to
it's
get a green
camouflage
pawn.
too. And then also when I'm streaming, I always have two black pawns. So like, always at all times, even people will check me in public when they see me, they're like, hey, you got the pawns? I'm like, yep, got them. Cause there's a pawn check thing we have. And then that's it. My phone, I got some books over here too. These are some books that I have read or like to read. Like this one's The Power of Habit,
Oh, good book.
Power of Habit. Yeah,
Charles
habit.
Duhigg.
You know what I mean? This one is Q&A with Bruce Pandolfini. He's one of the legends. This one is .com secrets. So learning about funnels, sales funnels, and basically stuff like that. I learned a lot from that book. This one is about living just health
Jeez.
life stuff. And then this last one here is a great one that I always recommend. Everybody hates the for dummy stuff, but that's the best stuff. It's like, this was sales for dummies. So sales closing for dummies, which is nice.
Very cool.
I learned a lot, man. I got my books over here outside of chess.
Nice. So, last and most important, give us all your handles where people can find you, where they can sign up, where they can learn more.
Nice. Thank you for that. Candles are GM Canty on everything. So twitch.tv/GM Canty. YouTube is actually youtube.com/James Canty III. So James Canty the third, basically there. That's YouTube, Twitch. Instagram is GM Canty, GMCANTY. And yeah, that's it. You can follow me on Twitch. I stream every single night. I have YouTube, Instagram, all that stuff. So yeah, that's
Cool.
who we are. Thanks for having me, boys.
Great. Mike, you want to wrap us up?
Absolutely. So yeah, for everybody listening, we had James Canty, future grandmaster, and then also boxer, influencer, content creator, just an incredible person just to in the sports industry. And for Mike Shredder, I'm here with Joe Favorito today on the Cusp Show, and we will see you down the road.